dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is April 11th, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is
Like a Rolling Stone.
Renal Colic, a Systematic Review. And we have two guest skeptics joining us today on the program. The first guest skeptic is Dr. Anthony Sapal, who is the chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine, University of Arkansas, for Medical Sciences. Welcome back to the SGEM, Tony.
Hey, thanks, Ken. Always great to be back with the SGEM listeners.
Well, of course, it's great to have you back on the show. And you have brought one of your superstar residents with you, a Dr. Joshua Hughes. Welcome to the SGEM, Josh.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate you having us.
Why don't you, we know about Tony, right? But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a second-year resident here down in the beautiful state of Arkansas, originally from Charlotte, North Carolina. And when I'm not hanging out with my wife and my two-year-old, I'm riding my bike or planning on what beer I'm going to brew next.
Well, boys, I am laying down this episode early. Usually I record it during the week and then throw it up on Sunday, but this is the second podcast I've done this week. And the reason is I'm off to Boston next week to have that little run from Hopkinton to Beantown. I'm still a little nervous about the run, but I'm planning to go for the experience, not for a personal best time there at the marathon. Josh, we like to start these things with cases, and so you've come up with a case, and I'd like you to present it to us as if we're your consultants. So you're presenting it to us like you're presenting a case from the Emerge, and we're the consultants sitting back, sipping our coffee, stuff like that. And you'll need to be brief, of course, because we are emergency doctors.
Sure. Okay. So fairly typical scenario. We've got a 36-year-old, previously healthy white male comes into the emergency department Sunday mornings, had 10 hours of right-sided flank pain that's progressively become worse, and now it's radiating into his right groin. He's been, as he says, sick to his stomach, but no vomiting, has not seen any blood in his urine, and not had any pain with urination. He denies diarrhea or any previous episodes of pain like this, and he states he has never had a kidney stone in his life. He did take 400 milligrams of ibuprofen with some temporary pain relief. In the ED, we went ahead and got a CT stone protocol, which showed a 0.3 centimeter non-obstructive stone in the right proximal ureter, and there was no evidence of hydronephrosis or hydroureter.
So, Tony, what's the question for today's podcast then?
The clinical question today is Tamsulosin safe and effective for the expulsion of ureteral stones?
All right, and so before we dive right into answering that question, we always like to have a little background information. And we've covered renal colic before on the SGEM. In fact, it was episode number 4, Getting Unstoned, Renal Colic and Alpha Blockers. And it looks specifically at Tamsulosin for the expulsion of distal ureter stones. Now, just to remind everybody, it was a multi-centered, randomized, double-blinded trial that did not show benefit. Now, it was only a small study. They had 129 patients, and it was recruited from 6 French hospitals over 5 years. Do you remember recording that one, Tony?
Ken, I do, and we had quite a great time doing it.
You know, you were the very first guest skeptic I ever had on the SGEM.
Well, Ken, I didn't realize that. Do I get some type of payment for that, perhaps? I mean,
I will send you a cool skeptical prize for that honor. But, you know, it started something because people really liked it. I think they enjoyed the program better than just having me sitting around and talk, but having a discussion about a case and a paper. And it really took off from there. And we've had, you know, multiple guests on since, but people really like it when you bring your chocolatey smooth vocalizations to the SGEM.
Well, Ken, that makes me chuckle every single time, but you know, you have had quite an impressive list of guest experts.
Yeah, and as you bring it up, I mean, the other time we covered renal colic was episode number 32, Stone Me, Fluids and Diuretics for Renal Colic. And it was a Cochrane systematic review done by the Beam founder himself, Dr. Andrew Worster. And they were looking for studies on high volume IV fluids or pushing oral fluids or even diuretic use to aid with the passing of kidney stones. And the conclusion from the study was that there was no reliable evidence available to support the use of these treatments for renal colic. And, you know, Tony, from this, from that podcast, we mentioned that there was a Cochrane systematic review expected from a guy named Zhu et al., and it was promised back in 2010. Well, it hasn't been published yet, but one of the SGEM listeners picked up on that and said, hey, you know, I've got this paper here. It's not this Zhu paper that you guys were talking about, but it's another systematic review. Would you consider doing a critical appraisal on that? And I said, sure, yeah, send it along. So thank you very much to that SGEM listener. You know who you are. And if you have other papers that you think we should be reviewing that we haven't, send them along. You know my email address, thesgem@gmail.com, and we'll take a look at it. But let's look at the systematic review that we have for today. We've got this superstar resident. Josh, what's today's citation?
Okay, this article was by Liu et al. The title is Tamsulosin for Ureteral Stones, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis of a Randomized Controlled Trial. It's published in Urologia Internationalis.
I'm glad to see that other people have trouble pronouncing things like I do. Well, great, Josh. Let's go through the PICO statement because we always like to, you know, pick out that when we're going through a paper. So what was the population they were looking at in this systematic review?
So they looked at 29 trials with 2,763 patients with ureteral stones.
So certainly a bigger systematic review than was done by Worster, where they only had two papers that they could include. How about the intervention itself? What were they specifically looking at?
So in 25 trials, they were given 0.4 milligrams of tamsulosin daily, and in five trials, they were given a lower dose of 0.2 milligrams daily.
And so tamsulosin's the alpha blocker. That's going to be the treatment of interest. What did they compare this alpha blocker to?
So they compare it versus a control, and then they compare it with standard therapy with along with tamsulosin versus control. They use the low dose versus the standard dose tamsulosin, and then they compare it as well with lithotripsy. And the standard therapies included different modalities such as ketorolac, diclofenac, hydration, cotrimoxazole, and ibuprofen.
All right, and then they must have had a primary outcome for the study. What was the primary outcome that they were concerned about in this systematic review?
They were looking at overall ureteral stone expulsion rate.
Excellent. So that's the PICO. Now, Tony, you're the chairman of the board, right? You're the chair of the department. I think you should have the honor of giving the author's conclusions.
So, Ken, I'll use my normal chair voice to give you the conclusion, but as with most of these trials, the authors conclude that tamsulosin works.
Okay, that's pretty to the point. I like it. The next thing we do in these critical appraisals is that we go through a quality checklist. And for systematic reviews, there are seven questions that we need to answer. So, Tony, I was wondering if you would, in that perfect consultant, supervising, attending physician manner, pepper this resident, Josh, this superstar resident, Josh, with those seven questions.
Not a problem. And just to let you know, Ken, we do this on every shift. I ask my residents all of the quality questions for validity for systematic reviews and randomized controlled trials.
So you interrogate them.
Absolutely. They need to know this stuff.
Excellent.
So the first question is, Josh, was the clinical question sensible and answerable?
Agree.
And, you know, I've worked with Josh to make sure that he is concise in his answers, and he seems to be doing a good job. So let's tempt fate here, Josh. Was the search for studies detailed and exhaustive?
It was a very detailed and exhaustive search.
I agree. And were the primary studies of high methodological quality?
They were not all of high methodological quality.
I agree with that as well, Josh. Some of the trials were, quite frankly, not very good. Were the assessments of studies reproducible?
Not too sure about that. Some of them might have been.
So they weren't very descriptive,
right,
on exactly how they assessed the validity of each randomized controlled trial. Were the outcomes clinically relevant?
Definitely agree with that one. They're very clinically relevant. This is something we see in the emergency department day to day.
Oh, Josh seems to be pretty sure about that one, and I tend to agree. Was there low statistical heterogeneity for the primary outcome?
Disagree with that one. There was pretty significant heterogeneity.
So Josh, you're correct, and we may talk about that later on. And lastly, was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
It was, yes.
Okay, so we're going to switch from good doc to bad doc, and I guess you just did the bad doc by interrogating him, so I'll be the good doc here. Josh, can you give us the key results? What was the primary outcome? What was the stone expulsion rate from the 29 studies?
Sure. The looking at the primary outcome, there was a significant benefit overall, tamsulosin versus control, with a relative risk of 1.33 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.23 to 1.44.
So Josh, those are pretty tight confidence intervals there too, and it's nice to see. And also it doesn't cross the line of unity of 1.0. So we know that the results favor the treatment of tamsulosin for the use of stone expulsions versus control, correct?
That's correct.
How about if you slice and dice it a bit? What about some subgroup analysis when you dig deeper into this study? What did they find with subgroup analysis?
Okay, so when they took tamsulosin at 0.4 milligrams alone versus a control, there was a relative risk of 1.51 with a 95% confidence interval between 1.34 and 1.69. When they took it with 0.4 milligrams coupled with standard therapy versus control, there was a relative risk of 1.41 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.19 to 1.67. There was no further improvement when comparing the 0.4 group to the 0.2 milligram tamsulosin group. And there was no difference between tamsulosin and other alpha blockers that were given.
So they did compare it to some other alpha blockers, and they didn't find a difference, and they didn't find a dosing difference, at least in effect, between the 0.2 and the 0.4 group of tamsulosin. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So their primary outcome was, did you get rid of the stone? But one of their other outcomes was, how long did it take? What was the stone expulsion time? In other words, you know, it's one thing to go, yeah, great, I passed my stone, but it took 3 weeks. It would be another thing if, yeah, I passed my stone, and it only took 3 days. And so what were the results for time to stone expulsion?
So in the tamsulosin 0.4 milligrams risk control group, there was a weighted mean difference of negative 3.4, and that there was a 95% confidence interval between negative 4.5 and negative 2.29. Coupled with the standard therapy versus control, there was a weighted mean difference of negative 3.61, the 95% confidence interval between negative 5.08 and negative 2.14.
So I'm going to have to bring in a higher power here, Tony, and that's you. What do they mean by weighted mean difference? Could you explain to the audience when people report a weighted mean difference, what are they really getting at?
Yeah, so Ken, you know, if we look at these results, essentially these folks expelled their stones roughly 3.5 days sooner if they took tamsulosin. And weighted mean difference sounds kind of complicated, but it really isn't. So for the listeners out there, we all know what a mean is. It's an average, and we can figure that out pretty easily. You add up a bunch of numbers and you divide it by the number of numbers you have. Well, in a study like this, when you're looking at a difference, you want to find out, well, how much faster did the tamsulosin group expel their stone compared to control or other groups? So we're looking for a difference, and it's the average of those differences. But hold on, there's a little asterisk there because we haven't talked about weighted. And this becomes important because, as you would imagine, if you are combining a trial that has 1,000 patients versus a trial with 100 patients, you probably need some type of correction factor to factor in the validity of the larger trial versus the smaller trial. And that's where the weighted comes in. So if you break these words apart for weighted mean difference, we know what mean is, we know what difference is. Weighted is quite simply giving a correction factor to a trial that may be larger or more valid. The combination then of the weights and the mean difference gives you a better estimation of the outcome that you're looking for. And in this case, it's a reduction in the days to expulsion of a kidney stone.
Great. I think that really helps people understand, because when you throw out these things saying, oh, it's statistically this or statistically that, I think it's important people understand what exactly they're talking about. And weighted mean difference isn't something that we see as frequently as some other types of statistical reporting. But I think that's enough EBM for right now. Josh, can you finish up the results section for us?
Sure. So in terms of stone expulsion, there was no significant difference found between the 0.4 milligram tamsulosin group and the lower dose of 0.2 milligram group. There was also not a difference found between tamsulosin and other alpha blockers.
Great. Thanks, Josh, for wrapping that up. So let's get back to the commentary, sort of the sit back and take a look at this study kind of stuff. Tony, what do you think based on this systematic review? What are your comments on this?
So, Ken, you know, I think it's really important that we review systematic reviews like this, because before the advent of systematic reviews, there was the misbelief that if you publish a randomized controlled trial, it was automatically great evidence. And now we know that not every randomized controlled trial is created equally. The same is true for systematic reviews. Just because it is a review doesn't mean it's one that's well done, which is why we asked those seven or so questions earlier to determine the level of validity of this review. And while I think this is a decent review, there were some things the authors could have done to clean it up a bit and make it a really well done and more rigorous type of review that you would expect to see, for example, from the Cochrane collaboration. And so while they answered a fairly sensible question, the literature search was also appropriate, covered a lot of sources without language bias. They only looked at published studies, and what you might hear some ClinEpi experts talk about are the gray literature citations, unpublished data, proceedings, conference abstracts, contacting content experts and authors to see if there's anything else out there that may have been missed, which can introduce potential bias. And when you look at the funnel plot, you can see that there may have been some publication bias here as well. And the authors in this review were fairly honest in saying that that probably occurred based on their funnel plot that we'll talk about here in a little bit. And lastly, the inclusion of some questionable trials in this systematic review is what really bothers me the most. It's that phenomena of, if we're going to combine data, it better be pretty good data. If you have some data that's not so good, then you get this garbage in, garbage out phenomenon. I think this review suffers from a little bit of that.
So, Tony, I'm going to back you up a bit just to capture a bit more EBM nerdy stuff. You mentioned funnel plots, and I want to make sure everybody's up to speed on what exactly is a funnel plot. Can you just give us paint a picture in your mind of what a visual of what a funnel plot is, so people who are listening to this can understand that?
Sure, Ken. So, like with all these EBM terms, most of it can be figured out by just looking at each individual piece of whatever it is. So with weighted mean difference as an example. But what a funnel plot is, it's quite simply that. It is a plot that looks like a funnel. The key thing to remember is it's an inverted funnel. And what you would hope to see is that out of the total number of trials that they pick, an even amount roughly fit on one side of the funnel as the other side of the funnel, meaning that you're finding studies that report positive results as well as negative results, which should probably be about the truth in the universe for the particular clinical question you're trying to answer. You would also expect that larger trials would be more centralized in the funnel because they would carry the largest amount of validity and precision with their result. And so an ideal funnel plot would look, again, like an inverted funnel with an equal number of dots distributed throughout the inverted funnel.
Okay, well, I think that helps. And you know, the Cochrane collaboration has a great website and has various learning modules for learning evidence-based medicine. And what I'll do is I'll put in the in the show notes up on the blog, one of their modules on publication bias, if people would like to read up on that a bit more. But let's get back to the critical review part of it, Tony. You had mentioned something about heterogeneity and things like that. Is there anything else you want to sort of mention in this critical review?
Well, we mentioned most of the things that bothered me about this review. We didn't really talk about the heterogeneity. And just for the listeners out there, keep in mind that when we're trying to put data together, the more those data look similar, the safer it is to combine those different pieces of data to then give you one final result. It's just more believable stuff, okay? When you have a significant amount of heterogeneity, what we're essentially saying then is, well, those data points don't really look so similar. Should we really be putting them together? And this is a decision that needs to be made by the folks performing the systematic review, in that if the data points are too different, i.e. there's a lot of heterogeneity, then maybe it's not appropriate to put those data points together. Or as it's say from a ClinEpi standpoint, it's not appropriate to pool the data.
Okay, well, you know, this is supposed to be a knowledge translation project, and you know, obviously you're a ClinEpi expert. I'm sort of trying to disseminate, but let's see if we've got knowledge translation happening. Josh, what's the bottom line from this?
So the bottom line is that tamsulosin is probably useless in most emergency department patients with this ureteral colic, unless their stone size is larger than 4 millimeters.
Okay, so Tony, how would you compare what we've gone through just with this critical review to what the author's conclusion was, something like tamsulosin for everyone?
Yeah, and you know, this is where, again, you have to be a clinician and you've got to use some common sense, because as Josh just told you, the bottom line here is very different than what the authors conclude. And that's because the problem with a lot of the literature on renal stones and renal stone expulsion therapies is that a lot of these patients are patients referred to urology clinics where the stones are a lot larger. We see some big stones, but the majority of stones we see in the emergency department are 3 millimeters or less, and all of those are going to pass anyway. Whether you give them tamsulosin, a different alpha blocker, calcium channel blocker, it really doesn't matter. So in conclusion, I would say that the things that really stick out to me is that there's significant heterogeneity in this systematic review. There's questionable quality of some of the included randomized controlled trials, and I'm not sure why they didn't exclude those. There's potential for publication bias, and of course, as we just discussed, the questionable applicability to ED populations. So the usefulness, the overall usefulness of the author's conclusions, I think is quite low.
Yeah, and I felt that there was some dissonance there between what the authors was saying and their results and their conclusions, and what we've just gone through as a critical review, and with Josh's bottom line saying, you know, if the stone's not bigger than 4 millimeters, is this really going to make a difference? But we've got to bring this back to the actual patient and the actual case. And so, Josh, can you bring this podcast back to the bedside and have a case resolution for this gentleman who came in with his renal colic?
Sure. So you want to treat the patient's pain and his nausea, plus or minus vomiting. You typically would do that with some IM ketorolac, morphine, and some ondansetron.
Hey, Josh, I'm just going to stop you there because, you know, I think that is excellent. And people don't come in saying, I've got a kidney stone. People come in saying, I've got pain and I'm throwing up. And it's really important as clinicians, right? We care about people, to treat them and treat their symptoms. And oligoanalgesia, or the lack of pain control, or the inadequate amount of pain control in the emergency department, continues to be a problem. So I'm glad for your case resolution. It was, I'm going to treat the guy, right? I'm going to give him some symptom relief. So kudos, clearly you're a star resident. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Thank you. So you return to the room after you see the results of the CT scan, and the patient looks a lot more comfortable. Still has some pain, but all in all, feeling a little better. So you tell him about the CT, let him know what it means in terms of his stone size and everything. You give him a couple prescriptions for analgesia and an antiemetic as well. Get him some follow-up with the urologist and give him some strict return precautions. Let him know that he's probably going to pass this on his own.
Great. Okay, so Tony, let's take a step back. I mean, we've gone up to the patient's bedside, resolved the case. Let's take a step back and say, now we've got this systematic review with 29 studies. How are you going to take this information and apply it clinically?
So Ken, I don't get CT scans on all of my renal colic patients, and particularly those that come in and say, hey, this is just like my kidney stone from before. And knowing that the majority of patients have small stones, I don't treat them with tamsulosin or other agents to help expel the stone faster. If, however, it's a patient that's a little more complicated, they've had complicated stones in the past, and or I get a CT scan and I see a larger stone, I do put them on tamsulosin. The thing that people need to understand is that you need to have these people on the medication for sometimes up to 2 weeks. It's something where we don't typically prescribe that much tamsulosin, but if you're going to do it and do it right, that's what you need to do. So if you're comfortable with that, that's what I recommend. If you're not, then treat their pain, get them follow-up, give them some antiemetics, and of course, always give them appropriate instructions to return to the emergency department if they need to.
Great. Well, guys, I just think we just wrapped up another episode of The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Good job.
Hey, thanks.
Now, I don't have a Keener contest winner yet because I haven't put up the podcast from this week. And that podcast was done with Dr. Anand Swaminathan, and that was an SGEM classic. This is just another shout out. If you guys like the SGEM classic, if you think there is some classic, historic, practice-changing paper that, you know, all emergency doctors should be aware of, that this is core content stuff, just fire me off an email. I'll take a look at it, and I'll talk to the Swami, and we'll do another podcast. We will have a Keener contest question. Josh, I'm going to ask you, would you mind giving the Keener contest question for this week?
Not at all, Ken. So there's a famous cardiac risk factor study that was started in 1948. It's named after a small town in Massachusetts that's on the Boston Marathon route. Do you know the name of this famous town? If you think you know the answer, send an email to thesgem@gmail.com and use Keener in the subject line. Be the first with the correct answer, and Ken will send you a cool skeptical prize.
Hey, I know the answer, Ken. Can I?
No, stop. Don't give it away, Tony. No, don't give it away.
Okay.
No.
All right, only for you, man.
Easy, boy. Easy. I don't want you to wrinkle that suit of yours. Now, this is a podcast, so people can't see this. But, I mean, if people could see you on video, I mean, every time I see you, you are dressed so well, and I'm always sitting around in scrubs. And I think you're like that guy from that TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's time to suit up, Barney.
Hey, it's how we roll down here at UAMS, man. We're just representing.
Anyways, I really appreciate you guys being on the show. It's always great to have you on the SGEM. And thanks to Josh for putting up with all our ribbing and abuse, of course, you know, as a resident. Josh, because of that, I'm going to give you the honor of giving the SGEM tagline.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate you having me on. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
We'll talk to everyone next week.